thing. We all seek optimal health, but most of us do not know how to achieve it. Dr. Paul Kaladze has spent a career in the emergency department. Now, he helps his patients avoid ever ending up there. During these podcasts, you'll learn how you can lose weight and prevent and reverse disease through new technology, a modified diet, and the use of some new recently approved FDA medications. This information is not meant to be medical advice. Please seek consultation from your own medical provider. Let's listen in.
Hello, everybody. It's Paul Kaladze back with the Metabolic MD podcast. And we're thrilled to have here today the health coach for our practice. And Red and I have worked together for about 3 years. He's provided tremendous support for our practice, both initially with metabolic health and now some with the new GLP-1 medication. So thanks for joining us, Red.
Yeah, no problem. This is great. Thanks for having me.
All right. So Rhett plays an integral role with the progress of our patients. So I felt it was time to have him on the podcast. But I'm going to let you go ahead and give a little bit of introduction, Rhett, of your background, and then we'll get into how you support our patients.
Yeah, sure. So I've been a trainer and a gym owner for, gosh, going on almost 10 years now. I was always into health and fitness. I've played a lot of sports, football, baseball, basketball, swimming, you name it. I've probably played it recreationally on a team in various different settings. So I got through college as a trainer and had the opportunity to purchase a gym shortly thereafter and start training clients and building a staff and working with, different patients from different backgrounds with different pains and working on nutrition and things of that nature. I've been CrossFit certified, NASM certified. I have different certifications dealing with mobility and physical therapy type work through Active Life, precision nutrition, right? Again, you name it, I've probably seen it and been around it in some extent. And just help people kind of along the way. And it's been super, super rewarding and fulfilling as a career so far. So, that's kind of my background is helping people get started with fitness overall and help their lives, be better overall. So
thanks for that. And, again, we've been working together about 3 years now. And when we started, I came to Red with this concept of metabolic health with a focus on low carb and intermittent fasting and strength training, and he embraced it. So with all our patients, we initially have him do an evaluation. I do my medical evaluation. Then he does an evaluation related to the factors that can influence people's success in this program. So drills down on a couple specific points. So Rhett, go ahead, if you would, and go through that initial evaluation process. I will have seen the patients. We'll have the continuous glucose monitors on the patients. And then during that first 2 week period, during the 2 week trial, he'll be evaluating these people. So speak to that initial evaluation you do.
Yeah, sure. So after they meet with you or with anybody else that I consider kind of the medical team here with MMD, I generally ask some basic questions. Number one, how do they like the glucose monitor? Are they having any issues with it? Kind of nip any of those questions in the bud right off the bat. Have they completed all the blood work? Have they done everything that you've asked them to do as a part of your initial consultation? That generally gives me a pretty good idea of how well they're going to follow a program overall. It's kind of how well they listen in that first consultation meeting. From there, I generally break it down into four main buckets of health, and we go through their background with each one of those buckets, what they've tried in the past, what's worked for them, what hasn't worked for them, what they would like to see change with each one of those buckets. And so those buckets include food. So what is their diet? What does their nutrition look like now? What does it look like in the past? Do they have any allergies? Do they follow any specific thing right now, such as veganism or vegetarianism or, any number of named quote unquote diets? Again, have they worked? Have they not worked? Then we move generally into fitness. And so, what does their fitness routine look like? Are they strength training at all? How many days a week are they doing cardio? Do they have any musculoskeletal factors that we need to be aware of? Back problems, shoulder problems, hip replacements, things of those kinds of natures. What would be prohibitive for them to start strength training? Do they have access to equipment or a gym membership? And so once we've kind of figured out those pieces of information that are going to be fairly easy for us to change, we move into a little bit more esoteric range of, what does their daily stress look like? Is it normal kind of work and family stress? Do they have a very stressful job? Do they have some unforeseen circumstances? I mean, I think you've seen it. You probably see it all the time. We get, unfortunate events, deaths in the family, people moving, career changes, these large fundamental shifts in who a person is and what their daily routine looks like. And so understanding where they're coming from a stress portion is helpful. And then what does their sleep look like? Do they sleep all the way through the night? Do they have sleep apnea? Do they have to sleep with a CPAP machine? Do they have to get up frequently? Things of that nature. We'll touch on a little supplementation, if we feel like that's something that's needed. But those are kind of the four buckets that we go through. And past that initial consultation, I tell them, hey, the plan going forward is that we're going to get your food in order first. We're gonna start you on this low carb, high protein diet. Talk about what that looks like. There's the first pause. I knew it was gonna happen. The postman is here. So all right, so we'll cut this out. So I'll start there. So again, after we get through those four buckets, we generally talk about food and how we're going to put them on this low carb diet, this high protein diet, what that might look like for them, and making sure that they're properly fueled for the workouts that we're then going to be kind of prescribing and working them through. We'll talk about what that strength training protocol might look like. Again, depending on what that looks like in the previous conversation, or previous parts of that conversation about what they're already doing. Some people are already hitting on all cylinders with fitness. Yeah, some people are starting from zero, and then talk about how once we get their food and their fitness, and hopefully we're seeing some results in terms of weight loss or at least gain, progress towards their goals, that then we can start hopefully tackling some of that stress and sleep, and those things that are a little bit harder, in my opinion, for people to kind of wrap their head around and get going with their life. So that's kind of the general consultation that I take them through. And then I pass them back off to you guys on the medical side for their follow-up after that 2 weeks.
Sure. So let's drill down a little bit on the food, which is the initial focus, which I think is great. And of course, people come to you with different backgrounds. My practice really is a low carb practice because the majority of our patients is retino have gained weight usually because of insulin resistance issues. Of course, we do a full evaluation of that with our fasting insulin levels. And our CGM evaluations. But then once we do that assessment and Rhett does his assessment, the focus then is on targeting, I mean, very specifically, we target a given number of carbs, and we want to keep the carbs at this level or lower. We target a given amount of protein, and we want to keep that at this level or higher. And if people don't have kidney problems, generally protein can go, can go relatively high. And then Rhett helps them understand that macronutrient mix. And just as an aside, the other thing, I don't really focus on fat that much. Down the road, Rhett will focus on it a little bit more. But really, initially, we focus on carbs and protein. So, can you talk about working with people to get them to understand how to target those, your education of them using an app to help count their carbs? Your recommendations regarding, weighing of food or measuring food, and how you provide that guidance and support.
Yeah, absolutely. So we generally start people off with a program called Chronometer. It's a free app. We have access to it, me and you. and everybody else on the medical team can kind of look at that information back end, which can be really helpful when talking to patients, you know, about their food choices, about their food timing, and about the rigidity of the program if they feel like it needs to be more rigid or they need to loosen up a little bit and kind of get out of the minutia sometimes. So like you said, we generally focus on a certain number of carb count. You know, that might be 50 grams, it might be 30 grams, you know, whatever that looks like. And we like to hold them to that number as best we can. You know, and that includes net carbs. So you can still have fiber, you can still have, I'm a big fan of fruits and vegetables, as I'm sure you are to most extent, you know, in terms of a practice of good overall nutrition and health, maybe not, you know, necessarily.
As you know, I feel we got to be a little bit careful with the fruit.
Yeah. Right. You know, and so, you know, like there is a time and place. I'm not a big fan of limiting or labeling rather foods as bad, right? I don't think that there's a bad food necessarily. There are worse foods and there are foods that don't fit our plan and don't fit our timing for what our goals are. Especially, you know, again, if it's a whole food that's, you know, naturally occurring and all that kind of stuff, like trying to stay away from all the preservatives and man-made foods, right? So we hold them to those carbs and then we generally give them a floor for their protein. And that looks a little bit different for everybody. Just off the rip, I generally like to tell people, hey, whatever your goal weight is, that's around the amount of protein that you need every day. And for a lot of people, that's really far from where they're at and where they're currently starting. And so we back that down. I go, hey, this isn't going to happen overnight. I don't expect it to. You know, my goal for you to, when you get started here is, can you get 100 grams of protein every day? And that might look like, you know, through meat products. It could be through protein shakes, could be through protein bars. Like the mechanism that we get there, we can always dial in later, but let's start getting to 100. And then if you can get to 100, let's start getting to 120. And for most women, that's probably about the number that we see on a fairly regular basis that people have a lot of success with. And so sometimes that looks like doubling their protein intake. For some of the gentlemen, they have to go a little bit higher, you know, 160, 180, something like that. It really depends on how much muscle mass they want to be able to carry around and retain going forward. So the protein one, like you said, can go pretty high depending on, you know, the person and kind of where they're at and where they're coming from. And things like that. And like you said, we don't necessarily touch on fat at the beginning, but if I feel like we're having somebody who's, you know, getting in their protein, watching their and limiting their carbs, but they still might not be losing the weight that they want to lose. That's generally where I'll start to look at those fat numbers because they can get out of hand pretty quickly, you know, with the different macro breakdowns. So I try not to get too far into the weeds in terms of them, you know, having to weigh and measure. I go, that's kind of a personal preference for people. It can be very, very helpful. It's like a GPS getting to your destination. It's nice to have turn by turn directions. A lot of people aren't tracking food to begin with. And so, you know, having a you are here point on that map for our journey is very, very important. So starting out with some tracking, I think is really helpful. It gives people an idea of how much they're truly eating and when they're eating and what they're eating. What does the content of their food look like? Is it Doritos or is it apples? Is it steak and chicken or is it mostly a protein bar or a protein shake? And so we can fix a lot of those quality issues, food quality issues, just by taking a look and seeing where we can make substitutions overall with it. But you know, I let you focus on the carbs a lot. And I think a lot of people have a good idea on what carbohydrates are. For the most part, I've never really, you've probably never met anybody that's like, I didn't know that, you know, donuts were a carbohydrate, you know, or that, I mean, I every now and then I'll meet some kids that I work with, and they'll be like, I don't have carbs, but I did have a couple of bananas today. And I go like, well, those are carbs, but you know, again, like, is that better than rice and pasta and all that stuff? Probably. So we provide, all of the clients all of the patients with some resources in terms of breaking down what pretty common foods are into proteins, carbs, and fats, giving them an idea of these are some high protein food items that we really want you to try to incorporate more of into your diet and nutrition. And then that's probably the first month of the program, to be honest, is the food, working on frequency. So how much are they eating in relation to like a fasting protocol that you might have them start, having them work on portion size. You know, this is where we start to deviate into what is this person's lifestyle look like? Do they have time in the day? Do they like to eat a couple of big meals, or do they need to be more of like a grazer or a snack, you know, smaller meal type of person throughout that eating window? How much protein are we getting in at each meal overall, right? And so I think you and I both agree on this, like to have a large source of protein, usually 30 grams or more.
Yes.
At that first, you know, we call it breakfast, but whatever that first meal is after they're fasting, right? So whether that's at 7 o'clock in the morning, or whether it's at 10 a.m. or whether it's at noon, whatever that first meal is after you're fasting, getting in a large chunk of protein can be a great way to kickstart the day, you know, create those healthy habits with food, and not feel like you're overly hungry or need to snack later on. And it obviously helps their CGM numbers and their glucose and insulin numbers
so
as well.
Few key things here. I think that's a great pearl. Target grams of protein in terms of what you want your target weight to be. I think in pounds you're talking about,
yes,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. So that's a great key. You know, you touched on the fact that basically low carb, higher protein diets have a tendency to be higher in fat. I have a tendency not to worry about that right at the beginning, but you know, long term, if people's progress slows down, sometimes we need to address that. And then you touched on really a third component, you know, starting your day with protein, which integrates into this intermittent fasting. Again, for people that have insulin resistance, the way to address that is a low carb diet, intermittent fasting, and strength training. And we're going to get to the strength training component here. But the intermittent fasting is key to that. And we, I think you and I both look at what a patient can do. And then we support them in that process. So can you talk maybe a little bit about the intermittent fasting component and how you get people with started with protein during the day?
Yeah. So, you know, you generally set them up, you know, with a given time frame. We have patients that fast anywhere from say 10 to 12 hours all the way up to, I think the highest one we have is right around 22 hours with a few patients. And so some of that I think depends on the person, right? Of what they feel comfortable doing. As you get better at fasting, you get better at fasting, right? As you do it more often, just like anything in life, as you do it more often, it will become easier to do.
Absolutely.
You know, and so I generally, I think you as well, we generally try to put maybe the bulk of that fasting time during a time when they're not going to be thinking about food anyway, which would be sleep, right? So if let's say it's from, you know, 10 to 10, right? Well, 8 hours of that is going to be, you're going to be sleeping, hopefully, right? Hopefully you're getting 8 hours of sleep. And hopefully you don't feel too many cravings right before you go to bed. And then we're just pushing it a little bit past usually what they would start with. And then from there, it's what does that first meal look like? You know, or snack look like, right? It could be a protein shake. I'm a big fan of having those a couple of times a day if you need to. It could be yogurt. It could be eggs. You know, anything. It could be multitudes of things. I like using a lot of dairy products, cheeses, things like that in the morning. Kind of getting some of those fats in that are going to let us digest throughout the day. Getting in some protein, and then if we're going to have some carbohydrates, using those around the time that we're going to work out or a time that we know that we're going to need to be a little bit more high energy, things like that. So that's kind of my take on the intermittent fasting. And again, it just really depends on what that person feels like they can tolerate, and then making sure that we can get them enough calories throughout the day that they don't feel hungry. They don't feel like they're having a lot of cravings for sweets or for anything that would kind of disrupt that and getting in that thing. So getting in those numbers. So there's this kind of balance of, are we hitting our numbers? Do we need more fasting, and playing this little game together?
So you can see the level of Rhett's expertise and understanding nutrition and macronutrient mix, helping people, bringing people along so that their diet is going to be help them be successful in losing weight. And then the third leg of the stool after diet and intermittent fasting is strength training. And then this, in my estimation, Rhett, is where you excel, because we have a lot of people come to us that never have lifted a weight in their life. And I'm huge proponent of strength training for middle-aged people, because if you can increase the size of your muscle mass, you can increase the quality and the receptivity of the insulin receptors on your muscles. You're soaking up more insulin, you're soaking up more blood glucose. That's going to help you burn more fat, if you will. You increase that muscle mass. And you're decreasing your risk of osteoporosis as well. I'm not a calories in, calories out person, but with more muscle mass, your basal metabolic rate is increasing a little bit. Good boy.
Don't know what's going on.
Your basal metabolic rate is increasing a little bit, so that is
Absolutely.
going to help as well. But I think what Rhett does wonderfully is taking people at whatever level of strength training they've done in the past, including none, and moving them gradually through that. And then he'll accommodate what their needs are. If they just, a lot of people are hesitant to go to a gym initially. They've never been in a gym. They're a little intimidated by it. So we provide all our patients bands, and he sets up a program, with a set of bands and, a couple 5 or 10 pound dumbbells. He can set them up with a complete regimen using body weight as well. So go ahead and talk about how you introduce people. And I'm, first of all, I'm going to compliment the women that come to our practice, because women get it. Men seem to avoid their vulnerabilities, and they wait for me to be seeing them in the emergency department, with a heart attack or a stroke before they get proactive. So the majority of our patients are women, because I think they're a little bit more insightful related to this. But with that comes a number of people that haven't worked out regularly in the past related to strength training. And of course, I want people to get their minimal cardio in, basic cardio following the American Heart Association guidelines. But the big focus is strength training. So, Rhett, why don't you talk about, especially like for an example, somebody that's never done much or any before, how you get them started?
Yeah, absolutely. So just like all of the changes that we try to make with the patients and with the clients, I want it to, number one, be positive, getting them closer to their goal. Number two, be something that they like to do. And then number three, they need to be able to be consistent with that change. And so strength training and working out is definitely maybe, I think, the harder piece of this with those three things. I think a lot of people, they don't like to work out, right? Like it feels good for those of us that like it. We like to do it. But for a lot of people, especially starting out, it can be very, very difficult, intimidating, things like that. So, like you touched on, getting in their cardio, getting people moving in general is like a big goal, right? So whether that's starting out with just tracking their steps or figuring out a time, the amount of time that they're in a physical activity, I'll take 15 minutes of activity at a given intensity level over nothing. Like to me, that's much more. It's going to get us to our goal much, much faster, and we can build on that as we go along. So, in terms of the bands, in terms of weights and strength training, I like to keep things simple, right? Compound movements, squatting, picking things up off the floor, pressing, upper body pressing and upper body pulling. And
So
that's
I'm going
what
to
my gym
interject.
follows right
Yeah,
there.
not everybody knows what compound movements are, but and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's the use during an exercise of multiple joints simultaneously.
Yeah, absolutely. And think multiple muscle groups, right? We all kind of know what a bicep curl is, and you're going to use your biceps, but a squat is going to use Your quads, your hamstrings, your glutes, your calves, all of those things are going to be used at once. And with that, you're going to use more muscle and recruit more muscle. And then that is in turn going to soak up more of that glucose and be more useful to us than, say, an isolation movement. Not that they're bad. They do have their time and place. And if you're wanting to get the biggest bang for your buck, I would stick with those compound movements. Now, again, we'll throw in some other isolation stuff, and they're a little bit easier, I think, with the bands to do some of those. And so if that's where we need to start, then that's where we'll start with those things. Again, 5 minutes of some bicep curls 2 to 3 times a day is going to do a lot more for us than nothing at all, right? But it's really about keeping people able to do the things in life that they want to do, right? Can they get up and down out of a chair or off the toilet? Can they go up and down stairs without problems? Can they, you know, put things in an overhead bin when they're traveling? Can they carry their suitcase around? Can they carry their groceries inside? A lot of those daily activities can be mimicked with a proper strength training routine in a way that you will feel a direct impact during those activities. You know, if you used to have problems going upstairs and now you're working out and now you don't, you can see that. You can feel that direct impact. You're no longer limited by these obstacles simply by changing, you know, the way that you work out or starting to work out overall. So again, we tend to keep things pretty simple. I like to tell people that it can be very complicated to go into a gym and very intimidating to see all of the different machines. And I like to tell people you're gonna pick four exercises. One that's going to be an upper body pull, one that's going to be an upper body push, one that's going to be a squat or like a lunge of some variation. If we need a leg press, we can. And then something where you're picking something up off the floor. And if we do those four things every day or most days that we're going into a workout, we're using the whole body. We're not neglecting a body part. We don't go 2 or 3 weeks before we quote unquote do leg day, right? And you're super sore, right? We can do all of these things. We don't have to worry about the minutiae and the overcomplication of how many sets do I need? How many reps do I need? Am I doing the right weight? We can dial all that stuff in later, but let's start by just working on each one of those movement patterns so that we don't lose them.
What I like about Rhett's approach is he doesn't let perfect be the enemy of good.
Absolutely.
And that includes, which I think is an area of expertise you have, people, you know, a lot of patients come to us with, oh, you know, my right knee is bad, or, mm-hmm. you know, I have intermittent back discomfort, or my left shoulder bothers me. And I think you do a great job working through those issues with people so they can still get the benefit of strength training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a lot of that is just figuring out, very much, I'm sure, how you guys do in the medical world of what is the cause? Is this movement related? As in, you know, every time I bend over, I hurt my back, right? You know, that's kind of the big one, right? People don't want to pick things up anymore because they hurt their back, or again, they have trouble going up and down stairs because they have knee pain. And so the question is this a strength problem? Is this a mobility problem? Is this a movement pattern problem? Can we get them to move in a similar way that without pain? Do they need more exposure to those things? Because it's like I like to use like a hinge on a door. If you don't move that door back and forth a lot, it's going to get rusty and it's not going to want to move. But the more that we move it, the better it's going to get. You know, we can, so that door needs to move more. And so kind of figuring out, you know, does this person need rest? Does this person need more activity? Does activity make that pain go away or does it get better? Those can all be things that we use to help diagnose kind of that issue. And then if we feel, you know, if I feel like there's, you know, like, hey, that's a problem that really needs to be looked at, right? I'll generally kind of, hey, physical therapy, some imaging might need to be done, you know, if it's just not getting better or it's been very chronic. But usually chronic pain can be helped by moving more, right? And again, it might be walking. It might just be walking. So yeah. That might be where hey, we need to take a couple weeks off from the gym. We're going to keep our steps up and move them a little higher, but we're going to give that area some rest, but we're not going to rest the whole body just because one piece hurts.
So that's great insight in terms of making sure that people are getting all components of the program, even if they have an injury. Now, in the few minutes we have left, I did want to focus, as I mentioned to you, Rhett, a little bit on, people that are beginning the GLP-1 medications, Wegovy, Ozempic, Zepbound, Mounjaro. And really, I'm mentioning this at the end because what we've been talking about here for the last half hour is exactly what people on these medications need to consider as well.
Absolutely.
And there's an underlying emphasis on strength training because as you're using these medications, if you choose to go down that road, and we have a minority of our patients on these medications, usually when they reach a plateau and their weight loss just kind of move things along. And of course, we use low doses for limited periods of time. But the strength training component is huge here because when you're on these medications, you are losing muscle mass. You think, I'm looking better. I've lost some weight, but you're losing muscle mass as well. Any special considerations related to the people that have chosen to use these medications for a period of time, Rhett?
Yeah, and it comes back down to the two things that we've talked a lot about, right? Protein intake and strength training routine. As some people may be unaware, but when you lose or gain weight, you're going to lose and gain weight in everything, right? Fat mass, fat tissues, muscle tissues, and skeletal tissues, right? Those you're going to get smaller or larger, and the percentage is what we are working on. And so when we're trying to lose as much, fat as possible, we want to keep that protein high. We want to keep those connective tissues, tendons, ligaments, bones, and muscle with the building blocks that they need, and giving them the protein, which is what they're made out of, enough time to do its thing and enough resources. It's again, another analogy, you can't build a house if you don't have any bricks or you don't have any wood. It just doesn't happen. So you got to have enough of that in the system to retain that and hopefully keep growing that as that body composition changes. And then again, the strength training becomes even more important because the body is very use it or lose it type of deal, and muscle is expensive, and it can be hard to put on, but it can be very easy to take away if we're not careful with our exercise selection and kind of what we're doing with our health and the amount of food that we're eating. And so getting in, again, enough protein and getting in that strength training, even more so than the cardio, I think, when we're on those GLP-1 medications, it is really, really helpful. Keeping, some heart, changing up some cardio type stuff can be a little different as well. But overall, it's really focusing and making sure that we're getting enough food intake, right, as those medications, kind of blunt that hunger hormone, right? It's very easy to not want to eat,
especially related to protein.
Right? That keeps us full. And so it's very much one of those things of dialing in. And I think part of dialing it in is staying on a regimen with what we're eating and when we're eating it. The quantity might come down, but if I have a protein shake every day with lunch, I should continue to have that. That shouldn't necessarily change, right? If I'm having protein at each meal and things like that.
So this foundation that we've talked about, low carb, high protein diet, intermittent fasting, strength training, absolutely essential for people that are on these medications because of the risk of weight gain when you come off the medications. I very strongly believe that these medications should not be prescribed for a lifetime. If somebody needs a little jump start or a plateau, is working through a plateau, I think it's appropriate to consider their utilization. But begin with the end in mind. Eventually, the plan is to come off the medication. And if you are not doing these things, all the scientific studies, the medical studies have shown, 60, 70% or more weight regain when you come off the medications. But if you have put all these habits in place, over the course of 6 months or a year, then that weight regain is not going to happen. Basically, as Rhett knows, when people embrace a low carb approach, you're kind of, you know, I mean, you never go back to eating something that is high in carbs or high in sugar without really thinking about it. It doesn't mean you can't ever have it again in your life. Sure. But it really, there really is a change that goes on in your mind that, that is sustainable for a lifetime. And again, that's why I like the low carb approach as opposed to the calories in, calories out approach. Yeah. Any other comments you want to make, Rhett?
You know, we could always go down the rabbit holes here, but no, I think, you know, like you said, not letting perfection be the enemy of progress is a huge mindset shift for a lot of people. We've gotten stuck a lot in society where, you know, we want the optimal diet, we want the perfect diet, you know, this thing over that thing. And it's, hey, let's just take some gradual steps. 6 months to a year is going to pass anyway. Right. So let's work on these small changes that we can incrementally, you know, deal with. I think it's super helpful having a coach to, or even just somebody to talk to about these plans, you know, even if they're, you know, not coaching you, but having somebody and having a support system is huge that you can go and talk to about, you know, an issue that you might be having or recognize some progress that you may not see. A lot of patients, you know, they'll lose weight, they'll gain muscle, and they won't always feel it, right? They won't always be able to see it. And I go, hey, take a picture from 6 months ago and look at you now.
Yeah.
It's a huge difference, right? And I go, though, you're not always going to be able to see that because we see ourselves in the mirror every day. You know, we look at the scale every day. It doesn't change that much probably for most people. You know, it takes a long time. And so this is an unwinnable game, in my opinion. There is no, as you know, with work and with being married and those kinds of things. The goal isn't to win at work. Nobody's won at work. It's the goal is just to keep working. The goal, nobody wins at marriage. The goal is to stay married. The goal of fitness is to stay fit, you know, stay healthy. There isn't like an end date or like, there might be an end weight. And there might be some end objectives that we want to get there, but our goal is to stay in the game for sure.
It's a continuous lifestyle process. Mm-hmm. So again, I want to recognize Rhett for the contribution he makes to our patients. In our standard program, I see patients once a month after they get through the trial period. Rhett is touching base with them a couple times a month. A lot of people not only appreciate the guidance, but do like the accountability that's there as well, because they know somebody about every week or so, either Rhett or I are going to be in touch with them. Yep. And then for those of you that live in the Dayton area, Rhett's gym is Altered Gym in the Centerville area. Does a great job, has a good clientele, has great people working with him, and again, has done a great job leading our health coaching effort. So this has been another episode of the Metabolic MD. We appreciate you joining us, and we'll be back to see you again in the next week. Thanks a lot, Rhett.
Yep, no problem. Thank you.
Welcome to the Metabolic MD. Health means everything. We all seek optimal health, but most of us do not know how to achieve it. Dr. Paul Kolodzi has spent a career in the emergency department. Now, he helps his patients avoid ever ending up there. During these podcasts, you'll learn how you can lose weight and prevent and reverse disease through new technology, a modified diet, and the use of some new recently approved FDA medications. This information is not meant to be medical advice. Please seek consultation from your own medical provider. Let's listen in.